Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
Hello.
How are you today, sir?
I am fantastic.
Some of the listeners may have noticed that we sound fantastic tonight.
Super, super duper.
Super fantastic. Why is that, Jason?
It's because we have new mics.
We sure do.
Fancy pants new
mics. Fancy pants. There's a Ween song called Fancy Pants. Fancy pants.
I'm not familiar with that.
I love Ween.
I'm just not familiar with the song.
It's a good song. Anyway, these are super fancy pants. That I can't not say.
You just
fancy
said super
pants.
Fancy pants. How about super fancy mics?
Yeah. Well, I can't help but say when I say it, super fancy pants. I want to say it, sing it. Anyway, yeah, these are awesome new mics. These are, what are these? Where the boxes are up there. These are Sterling ST51 condenser microphones. We got a pretty good price on them. I think regular price is like $100.
Yeah, and they were on sale for $79.
Yeah.
$99.
So those with a couple mic stands and some pop screens, and we are in business, sir.
Yes, yes.
We sound better than ever.
Better than ever.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled, and I hope that the listeners can hear the difference, and if you have any comments on that, please let us know, because we are thrilled.
That we are. It's pretty exciting, just because, you know, before... We wanted to sound as good as we could, right?
And yeah.
We weren't necessarily always doing that, so this should help.
Right, right.
So now, even if we aren't professional, people might assume we are, just because we sound so good.
We're more likely to sound professional now.
Right.
That means I need to start enunciating everything that I say very, very clearly, and speak always in an announcer voice. So, Jason, I hear you have some news for us.
Some news.
Yeah. Do you wanna tell us what news you have? Because I think the listeners might be interested in this.
I think they might too. I'm gonna tell you a story because I think that's the best way to tell the news.
I have a secret. I love stories.
Hey, me too. And this is a fake story. I'm kidding. This is a true story. So this is a true story about Gen Con. And you're thinking, oh gosh, these guys are gonna talk about Gen Con again. And I'm like,
over and over and over and over.
It's like the one thing we have, so we have to keep talking about
yeah, and
it.
And it's the only con we can ever make it to.
Right, so this time, we're going to start going to other cons. That's our plan. It's not our pledge, because we don't want to be roped into it, but that's our plan.
That's our plan. That's our goal. So anyway, go on.
So I'm at Gen Con, and we went to Gen Con. We had put our names on a list published by Car Trunk Enterprises.
Yeah, the unpublished.
That is the one. Mm-hmm. So... we put our names on that list, and the idea with that was that people could see your game, your unpublished game, and they could ask if you wanted, you know, if you would play it with them, and they could give you some feedback and all sorts of stuff, right? So, like, right. Other designers or just people who are interested. Well, it turns out that other people were looking at the list as well. Other people called publishers.
What?
Whoa! So, I got a call. Or I guess an email, sorry.
Yeah.
From a publisher who was interested in seeing Gunslinging Ramblers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I mean, you remember when this happened. I like immediately texted you and was like,
yeah.
Ah! I was pretty terrified.
Yeah. And to anybody who doesn't remember, Gunslinging Ramblers, it's the game that you pitched a long time ago. Episode 10. Okay.
Yeah, I looked that up today.
Okay, yeah. And that was the one that you'd prototyped and brought with you to Gen Con. And I did that with Damsels in Distress, and we were just trying to, I mean, we wanted to play with people, but we were also just trying to get some experience with that stuff.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And putting it in front of publishers was certainly a dream of ours, but it was not anything that we expected to do.
Nor anything we planned on trying to do at Gen Con.
Right.
So when I get this email from a publisher, I'm kind of like, oh, wow. I don't know. It was mixed emotions. Like, I wasn't super excited. I was more super terrified. So, but, you know, you and I talked about it, and we kind of chalked it up to, hey, even if you go down in flames with this, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Even if you go down in flames with this, it's good experience.
Absolutely.
You know? And we had already talked to some other game designers. Mm-hmm. And when I got that, and they had talked about how, you know, going to publishers is a big thing. You're going to have to get used to it. So I thought, hey, this is my chance, you know? And
yeah.
So the guy agreed to meet me on Saturday morning. And he agreed to meet me on Saturday morning. And he was going to bring a couple friends. Mm-hmm. It was just going to be me and these three guys, which made it more intimidating. There wasn't just one person. And they wanted to spend a little bit of time playing my game and give me some feedback on it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, awesome. So, you know, so I show up and I'm nervous and I meet the guy and he sits me down with his friends and then we start playing my game and
mm-hmm.
I'm all nervous and fumbling and stuff.
Yeah, right, right.
Because, I mean, truth be told at this point, I hadn't exactly played the game a ton of times yet, right? So, I mean, we'd only played the game a few plus times.
Yeah.
Really trying to get used to it. And I'd made some rules changes right before Gen Con mm-hmm. for the prototypes and...
Yeah, I'd only played it with you one time, I think.
Right, right.
Yeah, right.
And the rules changes I made were not the greatest. So they caused some issues. And so it just, I was very nervous, you know, and it didn't seem to be going very well because I had to explain the game repeated times to everyone to make sure they knew what was going on. And I thought, oh, this is terrible.
Mm.
And but, you know, several times I gave the guy an out. I was like, we can just play a couple more hands if you want. And he's like, no, I want to play the whole game. Let's keep going.
Hmm.
Okay. You know, I mean, I'm not going to tell the guy no, but I didn't want him to feel like he was roped in, you know. And
yeah.
So he started kind of pitching ideas to me about the game. Like, hey, maybe you could try and change this rule or that rule. And I was like, cool. So I one thing I will say that I did, as soon as he started giving notes, I took a notepad out and I started writing them down.
Oh, yeah.
Not because he was a publisher, but because I would do that with anyone.
Sure, of course.
And I felt like that showed some respect, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
that's what we were there to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he made some good suggestions. His friends made a couple suggestions that I liked. Even the ones I wasn't sure about, I wrote them all down because there's never a bad idea. It's always worth looking into.
Always worth looking into. Absolutely.
So we get done and he walks me out of the demo hall. And as we're walking out, he says, I'm interested in buying your game.
Whoa.
I'm like, what? And I think I said to him, really? Are you sure? Is this a wise decision? So we met the next day. We talked some more about it. And we kind of made a gentleman's agreement that we would talk more once we got back from, you know, back to our respective places.
Yep.
And that, you know, he gave me some terms, ideas of what I could be expecting. And mm-hmm. So the next step I did, which he encouraged me to do, which is the sign of a good guy.
Yeah.
He said, talk to some other game designer friends you have who've been published, you know, talk to them and make sure you feel like this is legit.
Yeah.
And that's great because I was already planning on doing that. But to hear the guy say that made me feel really good. So I did that. I mm-hmm. talked to a few friends who've been published and just kind of talked to them about what I should expect and what sounds fair.
Yeah.
And what we had talked about was right there. It was very fair. And so from there, we went back. We talked back and forth for about a month or so after Gen Con.
Okay.
And we went back and forth about the verbiage and all that. And
mm-hmm.
About a week ago mm-hmm. from when we recorded this episode, I signed a contract.
Dude.
So
that's so awesome.
So my game's going to be published.
Uh-huh.
It's by a newer publisher named Hat Trick Games.
Hat Trick Games.
Yes.
Okay.
The guy who runs it is based out of Ohio.
Okay.
So
not too far away.
No, and that's like they have origins and stuff there. And
yeah,
sounds like they've got a lot of good game designer groups around there.
Oh, really?
So that's pretty exciting.
Good.
So, yeah. So that's the big news. So some more details. Obviously, I can't get into super details about how the contract works and stuff
Yeah, of course, of course.
But the biggest thing I did was check with some other people. Some of the things that I just wanted to highlight was, I think he has, well, I don't think, I know, I guess, I think, I think the paper that I signed that was legal said, no, it gave us 18 months to get the game out.
Okay.
Which seems pretty fair to me.
Sure.
And the other thing was he was willing to give me some money up front versus royalties.
Oh.
Meaning I get some money up front
uh-huh.
and then for that many copies of the game, I don't make money because I've already been paid it.
Sure, of course.
But the bonus to that is
mm-hmm.
if we don't publish the game and if the game wasn't ever published, right, by mm-hmm. by him, I keep that money. It's mine.
Oh, there you go.
So what's cool about that is he's risking something. I'm risking something. I'm risking, here's my game.
Yeah.
Do something cool with it.
Yeah.
And he's risking some cash.
Yeah.
So
you're both in it. Both in it together.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. some of the things that he said helped catch his eye.
Uh-huh.
Other than he liked the way the game played, he really liked, one of the things I'm excited about for the game is the simplified version of poker that you play within the game.
Yeah.
And that caught his eye right off the bat, which made me happy because it was one of the things I was the most proud of.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
And the other thing was the fact that I had a prototype that was a little bit fancier,
uh-huh,
and already had a little bit of artwork on it, and that I had hired someone to do just a couple pieces of artwork up front that wasn't going to cost much money. And he said when he looked at that, he knew that I was, you know, I was serious.
Committed to it. Right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that made me feel good because,
yeah, that's great.
You know, I mean, we could have just thrown something together on cardstock and taken it there and
right,
might not have taken that as seriously. So, so I felt really good about that. And that was really good feedback from him.
Okay. Oh yeah. Well, other stuff that caught his eye. I know you had those cool poker chips.
Yep. The poker chips also were something that he thought was a nice addition to the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he, like I said, he had some really good feedback for me too.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of went back and forth on some rules ideas and stuff that second time we met at Gen Con, and that really made me feel good about, we were really on the same page for what we were looking for to get out of this game.
Yeah.
And that's important to me because,
yeah,
I mean, as the designer, I want to be a part of that.
Of course.
So, and he liked the fact that I already had an artist and that I already had a quote from an artist. He thought that was great.
That's very cool. I can't believe you got such a good quote so fast, too. I mean,
yeah, that was very fortunate.
Yeah, you lucked into that big time. And, yes, and congratulations for that.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, and that helped because, you know, I'm always looking for other talented, creative people who want to do stuff. And
you're really good at that.
I will say that is one of my talents of, from doing the filmmaking stuff we've done.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at finding people who are willing to do things at a very good rate and that are very good at what they do.
Yeah. It's really one of your greatest talents.
So,
yeah,
this is why I'm a good producer. That's what producers do.
Yeah.
So over the next months here, we're going to be working. I'm going to be working closely with the artist, doing a lot of the art direction with the artist on where we want. And obviously the publisher has a lot of say in that too.
Yeah, of course.
But I'm getting, you know, more control than I thought I would up front, which is cool. And I'm running a lot of the development of the game. Again, working closely with the publisher, but, you know, he's very keen on it being my game.
You know?
He's like, I don't just want your name on the box. I want it to be your game. I want you to have a lot of input in how the game turns from here, from the first stages we're in. And we've already, like I said, we've already made some awesome ideas that I need to play test. And I think once I do, maybe we'll record some play test sessions and we'll get them out here on the show.
Yeah. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to try it again, see some revisions to it. Cause I haven't seen it since I haven't played it since before you made that prototype for Gen Con.
Right.
Last time I played it, it was just pieces of paper
glued to poker cards.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm thrilled. I mean,
we've come a ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. I'm really excited. So some of the stuff that the publisher liked to see, he liked to see that you had a nice looking prototype that you obviously spent some time on. He liked that you already had a plan together for an artist and for art style and all that kind of stuff. Didn't you also have some marketing ideas in advance also?
I did. And we've talked about some of those, and I think we may try and use some of those.
Yeah.
Some of them might fly. Some of them might not, you know.
Sure. And we don't want to, it's too early to say what any of those are,
but
the fact that you had some of those ideas
was
also a big selling point for you.
And I think what really gave me the advantage was, and you too, when we've talked about this, we were completely comfortable with self-publishing.
Yeah.
You know, and so I kind of can't help myself to start to think of ways to make that happen.
Sure.
So I was thinking about what I would do for the Kickstarter and how I would do that, you know, and I was able to pitch a lot of those ideas to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice, you know, because that's got to give them a level of comfortability.
Yeah. You know? Just that much more added commitment from you as a designer.
Right. Now, that said, the fact that I had an artist, some game companies might be like, we know who we like to work with, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you hadn't signed a contract with the guy, right? I mean, you just kind of had a gentleman's handshake agreement saying, hey, this is the plan if everything goes well.
Yes, you're talking about myself and the artist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I said, I'd like to do this game. And he gave me kind of a quote about what I could expect price-wise based on what I thought we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had an agreement that, you know, and at that point, if I had stopped doing what I was doing, I would have paid him for the few pieces of artwork he had done.
Of course, yeah.
And we'd have called it good.
Right.
But he's somebody who I would like to keep working with. And once we, you know, if we, once we get everything locked down, then I'll be able to talk more about who he is.
Yeah.
The artist and stuff like that. So, cool. But I want to post to the listeners, if you guys have any questions, if you're trying to get publishing and that kind of stuff, you send us an email, because obviously I can go into a little more detail then. Cause I'd like to, this just proves to me why we need a show like this, right?
Yeah, right, right. I mean, that's, I think this is super, super exciting for me, because this is what we had hoped to accomplish with this show, is to be, again, completely transparent with this process. And the fact that it has already happened is so exciting for us.
Right. Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting for you as a developer, as somebody who's trying to sell a game, but it's exciting for both of us as the hosts of the show, who are trying to get something out there in the community that everybody can experience and everybody can learn from.
Yeah, and I have to say that one of my first thoughts when I realized that this was going to happen, like I was going to sell this game, was, this is going to be so awesome on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm freaking thrilled about this.
Me too. And I mean, I want to say that it's not, I'm confident this is not typical, right? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my first prototype I've ever made to try and get other game designers' feedback, and I sold that. I mean, that's, that doesn't always happen, obviously.
I'm sure
we talk to a lot of other designers, who said, you know, they've tried for years with different games. And I mean, I had the right idea at the right place at the right time and met the right person.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, a huge, huge thank you to John and
Unpub.net,
because
wouldn't have happened without that.
No, I mean, that is what opened that door.
Right.
Which, John, proves what you're doing is very worthwhile.
Yes. So thank you, John, very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. Congratulations, man. I'm so happy for you. And I can't wait to hear more about what's coming, what happens. You know, keep us posted. I'm sure we'll keep talking about it on the show.
Oh, most definitely. You know, yeah. I mean, we as we move through each stage, I really want to talk about it. Like I said, I'd like to do some recorded play tests again with us and our, you know, a couple more people, like our wives or something, and really get that feedback built back in.
Right.
Because I really like doing those shows.
You know, the listeners
seem to like that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think anytime we can do those kinds of bonus episodes, it's super fun.
Yes.
Super fun. Yeah.
So.
Cool. Well, again, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So it looks like with time here, I bet we're going to skip what you've been playing.
Yeah, we might as well. We can move on to the mechanic of the week, and this time it's your turn, sir.
It is my turn, and I'm grabbing my list of mechanics.
Because from your phone?
Yes, that I always have, because I was trying to decide what I wanted to do.
Can you? Are you looking at that screen through the pop screen?
I am looking at it, and it's kind of hard to see.
I imagine.
But I don't want to hold it too high, because then I look away from my, then I look away from the mic, so then it's like, hey, I think I see this.
You mean you can't hear me? You can't hear me very well when I'm not talking straight into the mic?
Actually, I can hear that pretty well.
Yeah, that was better than I expected, actually.
So,
we're still learning these mics, but it's super fun. I'm having fun.
It is. So,
mechanic of the week.
Mechanic of the week. So, recently... That's usually my line, but that's okay. So, recently, I was watching a video of a talk with Reiner Knizia.
Ooh.
Oh. He's like the Stan Lee of game design. I mean, Ryan, he's designed...
Excelsior!
His website says he's designed over 500 games.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So,
well, design, like, I guess that would mean sold too, huh?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So anyways, he was giving a talk, and I watched like this 20-minute video, and man, he's interesting.
Is he?
Talking about game design and stuff. He's funny. He's German, so he's got the funny accent.
Yeah.
Speaks really good English, though.
Oh, good.
And he was in London giving this speech and cracking jokes and stuff. And so when he was giving the speech, he has this game called Who Was It? Which is like Clue, kind of, except for... way better.
Okay.
And there's an electronic box that has a couple inputs on it to say, I'm in this room. The way he described it, it says, I'm in this room and I'm in this room and I'm doing this. And you click the button and this voice comes on and says, go and get me a banana, or something like that. So then you have to go to another room, get the banana, and bring it back to them, and then he'll give you a clue. Because you're trying to figure out who committed this crime or something.
Do I actually have to go to my fridge and get a banana, or this is no, on the game board?
It's on the game board.
All right, well, you know, it could have been one of those games, you know?
It's not one of those games.
Well, thank goodness.
So anyways, electronic components.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
So, can be done very poorly, can be very kitschy, very
yeah.
not necessary, or it could be awesome, apparently, because that game is like the top-selling game in Germany for like 3 years running.
Wow.
And he said that he believes that it's a mix of the new style and the old style, thus meaning the fact that it has this electronic box is part of the reason it's so successful.
Mm.
And I thought, that's kind of cool, because the games that I remember when I was a kid that had electronic components, they were kind of lame.
Kind of terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I had this quiz game where you'd hit a buzzer and it would light up to tell you who was first. And that was kind of cool because, mm-hmm. you know, the point was I'm clicking this buzzer and it would tell you who said, pick me first to answer a trivia question, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That has a point. That has a function.
Yeah, but sure.
So many times, you know, the electronic components are just standing in for something physical that could be there. Like if yeah. it's an electronic random number generator, like an electronic die or something mm-hmm. like that, what's the point of that?
Yeah, right? I have Star Wars Trivial Pursuit that has a little R2-D2. You push his head down
exactly.
and it randomly gives you a number. Or I could just roll the die.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the game could cost $3 less.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Electronic components. Because there's something that intrigued me. They seem extremely cost prohibitive.
Oh, for our kind of point of view, absolutely. I mean, right. yeah. Yeah, because it's not just a matter of getting that together. I mean, all that's got to be custom designed for you and mass produced. And
well, and there's programming involved.
Oh,
you
yeah.
might as well make a dang so video much. Game.
Yeah.
But that got me thinking about an idea
okay.
that I actually had forgotten about when I said we're going to talk about this tonight, because I just looked at my phone and just decided now. So, because okay. I mean, I what I do is so that I always have a mechanic. Is
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whenever I think of one, I just jot it down on my phone. And
sure.
then, you know, and that I jotted down because of Reiner Knizia giving his little speech.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was thinking this could be really fun, right? Lots of people have smartphones, right? I mean, if you yeah. have a group of people, chances are one of them has a smartphone, right?
Yeah.
Actually, chances are probably in America, four of them have a smartphone.
Sure.
Like, people who are playing a game. So what if you had a game like, say, pick a game that does expansions.
Sentinels.
Okay, that could work.
Okay.
Another one I thought of was Munchkin.
Sure.
So we'll cover both those.
Okay.
So let's start with Munchkin, because Munchkin's kind of goofy. So yeah. I think this fits really well.
Okay.
So Munchkin releases a free app. Right? Steve Jackson, here's an idea for you. So Munchkin releases a free app expansion, or maybe it costs $2. Maybe it's $1.99, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an expansion that you use with the game. So now you have this electronic component. Maybe there's like a randomized thing in mm-hmm. it, right? That does stuff.
Yeah.
And you use that as part of the game.
Okay.
Settlers, you could do the same thing with. That could be your randomizer for events that happen in the game, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Sentinels, you could do it too. What if there were special abilities that came up only every once in a while? Right? Like they pop up.
Okay. So like every time you start a new round or something, you hit the button to say what's the benefit or what's the penalty
right.
or whatever this
round.
And
it's like plus one to attack and you're like, Bance!
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't seem that impressed with my awesome idea there.
Well, no. It's a perfectly good idea. I'm thinking of that in... Well, okay, the game that's coming to mind is a game called Dragon Strike that I have. It's a Milton Bradley kids game. It's really dumb. It's a roll and move game. But I love this game, and I love breaking it out at parties because like I said, it's a kids game, and the main feature of this game is that you have a plastic dragon in the middle of the board, okay?
I'm sold.
Yeah, it's great. But you know those like when we were kids and you go to the dollar store or something, and there are those plastic snakes that are like articulated, and you can hold them out straight and they're straight, or you wiggle and they just kind of snake
yeah.
back. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's this plastic dragging it, and the body is a solid body, and there's a motor sticking up where his neck goes, and you stick on top of the neck one of these snake things with a dragon head on the end.
Nice.
Yeah. So you hit the button at a certain time, or you roll a certain thing on the die, or you get to a certain square, you hit a button on the back of the dragon, and the dragon's it turns back and forth, and this dragon head neck sweeps and whirls all the way around the board and will pass over you as a player, okay? And the way it's structured is that the goal of the game is you have to go out into the out on the board, and you have to pick up a red gem and bring that back to your base. Then you got to go out and pick up a blue gem and take it back to your base. And then after you get both gems, you can go to the entrance to the dragon's lair, and then you can use those two gems to open the door, and then you go into the dragon's lair and you pick up the golden eggs, and then you got to get the eggs out, right?
Right.
Okay. So each player's pawn is this, it's a stand-up thing. It has a little sticker with a character on it. But the thing is that when you're carrying that gem or those eggs back, you actually set the plastic piece of the gem or the egg on top of your pawn. And so if you hit the button, dragon's head will go sweeping and whirling across the board, and it might knock that gem or those eggs off the top of your character. And then you lose them. They're just, boom, they're dropped in that space. The only way you can pick them up is to walk off that space and come back to it. But you can only pick them up if you land on that space. So what that means is that that item is dropped, and anybody else who comes along can come and grab it and steal it from you.
And that's difficult because of the roll and move.
Roll and move, it's really difficult. And I usually win, but I don't think that's because I'm good at it or because I own the game. I think it's just luck of the draw. But it's... I love the game because it's so dumb. It's so simple. It's completely brainless. It basically plays itself. But the fact that there's that cool motorized dragon with that long neck sweeping and curling and twisting around, it's super fun. And that is why that game is so fun, because of that electronic component, that motorized piece. So I would say that digital stuff, you know, the app on your phone, the box that randomly picks something to play out, that's not as much fun as some kind of electronic motorized component. I find that more exciting.
I can get on board with that. I think functionally, if you want to have, so it's just going to be kind of a random thing. Likely if you have a motorized thing, I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
There are some games that are completely built on electronic components. There's that game where you bounce the lasers around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So, that is the mechanic of the game, like bouncing lasers. We'll talk about that some other week. The mechanic of the week is bouncing lasers.
Bouncing lasers.
Not in your eyes, kids. Not in your eyes.
There's other games like, I don't know if you play Catchphrase.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
Catchphrase. Yeah. It was originally, you have a wheel of on a piece of paper, a wheel of words that you put in a little thing, and every time you hit the little trigger, it advances the wheel one. So in that case, electronic catchphrase is a little simpler, a little better, because it's all just in there and displays on the screen. That's really nice.
I have this game too. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember what the name of it is, but it's like Hot Potato with words. So it's like you're trying to get people to guess words.
Yeah.
Like Catchphrase or Taboo style.
Okay.
But the game is counting down randomly and will eventually be like, and then your hands blow up. And then,
oh, I hate it when my hands blow up.
That's not true.
God, it's a bummer.
So electronic components. Uh-huh. I was just trying to think of, I wish we could think of a way to work them into one of our games. I mean, I guess the problem we run into, of course, is that it's expensive.
Yeah, it's really expensive. When I've played D&D in the past, I've had people who say, "Oh, I have this cool app that'll let me roll dice. I have this cool app that'll let me keep track of my character sheet on my phone." And I pretty quickly decided to ban all screens from my D&D table, because that serves to be nothing but a distraction. Because when the guy has to go to look at his character sheet, his phone's gone to sleep and he has to wake up his phone. He has to pull up the app again. He has to look at it. And then, it's teeny tiny type. So he's got to scroll to find the thing. He's got to, open it up. You know what I mean? Make it bigger on the screen and look around and find the right thing. Or he could just look to a piece of paper sitting on the table and go, "Oh, it's 3.
And then he could roll 3d6.
Right. Rather than then minimizing that or whatever you do, making that go away and pull up the dice rolling app. And then, no.
See, and I feel like if you're going to use an electronic component for anything, it needs to be like the flip guys have talked to us about, the flip table guys have talked to us about, DVD or VHS. That has to add something to the game, right?
Yeah.
So it shouldn't just be doing something that we can do with dice.
Right.
Or some other easy random generator, right?
Yeah.
It needs to be something that we can do, we can't do. That's why the who was it thing is cool, because it's giving you information.
Okay, I can see that.
Now, granted, those could be on cards or something.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool that it's the box. I mean, I like that.
Do you think this whole electronic component idea, could that ever really get beyond gimmick?
I mean, that's a good question.
If it's being tied in with a board game. Because, I mean, obviously, a video game is a completely different story. But to tie it in with an actual tabletop game of some kind, can it ever be anything other than just a gimmick? And I'm not sure. I don't know. I would lean towards probably not.
That's probably true. I mean, I certainly can't think of a way to make it not gimmicky. Because even in that game, I think it's really cool, but it's gimmicky because the game is talking to you, right? I mean, but then again, I mean, a lot of games are gimmicky, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's a pretty big gimmick.
It really is. Know?
I mean, Cash and Guns, a game we really like. It's gimmicky because you've got the rubber guns.
Yeah, and I'm not saying gimmicks are a bad thing. I mean, I like Mousetrap because it's got a bunch of cool pieces that you put together, you know? I like Dragon Strike because it's got... there's a good reason to have a gimmick like that. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just wondering, could this electronic component really be something...
Meaningful?
Meaningful, truly compelling, that makes that game something special. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but okay.
Hold the phone.
Whoa. Arms raised. Eyes got real big.
I just had an idea for a game.
Give it to me.
How about an Old West game about telegraphs? Okay?
Okay.
Telegraphs. Now you're trying... Exactly. You're trying on there's a big board. You're trying to build telegraph lines across the board. But you're actually like Lego style building the telegraphs across the board, right?
Okay.
So, in addition to building the telegraphs, you're trying to get information back and forth, right? So, you're trying to put a piece into a place, right? Like you've got your receiver piece of a certain color, say, like he's the orange receiver piece and the blue receiver piece,
okay,
or the blue sender piece. And when you get those in place, some sort of message displays that you can see and no one else can see.
Okay.
And then you take that piece and you can, the receiver, and you can now put him somewhere as the sender to send that down the line somewhere else. So you would be, and so maybe somebody can intercept that. Right? Like your sender's there. Somebody could try and build onto yours so they could intercept the message as well. Maybe a telegraph game wouldn't work. Maybe it would be better as a spy game where you're trying to intercept messages.
Coded messages and all
right.
that.
Now, it's still a little gimmicky. But I think that's mean. If you could pull that off, that's meaningful to the game.
Yeah, if you could make that a compelling experience. Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, sure.
That game would be expensive.
Yeah, right. So that's because you'd have to have some kind of a conductive board that you could... install these different pieces, and each of those pieces would have to have some little electronic component that would identify it as being a part of the blue network instead of the red network or something.
Well, not necessarily, because if a piece was a piece, that would allow you to like, okay, I'm going to branch off your line here. Now when it shoots the message down, it's going to go both ways, right? Or does that how electric currents work?
It can work that way, I guess, but
or like I install a switch and now instead of it going to you, it's going to intercept to me.
Yeah. Well,
I know it's still a gimmick.
Yeah. I don't know. Electronic components.
I guess for me, it really comes down to the cost.
Yeah.
I can't see how electronic components would be cheaper than cards.
No.
Or little chits that you'd put on the board.
Yeah.
So that being the case, how do you justify making the game? You know, unless it's a game like the laser bouncing game, right?
With lasers.
But even that, you've got that Easter Island game.
Yeah.
That basically is that game without the lasers.
That's true. That's right.
Though I would probably argue the game is more fun with the real lasers.
I have to admit, I would really like it if lasers shot out of the eyes of those Easter Island heads and then went into the ears, and that would be pretty cool.
The Mories. That's what they're called.
The Maoris?
That's what they're called.
Maoris? Their names is Maori?
I think it's Maori. It's M-A-O.
Maori. It's pronounced Maori.
You don't know that.
I do. M-A-O-R-I.
Then why'd you just call them statues? Why didn't you pimp it out with a real name?
I don't think that's what their name is. I mean, that you're thinking Maori people. Are they like the
Isn't that what they call the heads, too?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
We could Google it.
We won't. No. But some listener probably will.
Tell us we're wrong.
Or we'll get an email, like a comment, like we did on the website last week from Brian.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, made fun of me. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting topic. I don't know. Hadn't thought of that.
So yeah.
Is it time to move on?
Sure.
Okay. What's next?
Practicing the pitch.
It's time for practicing the pitch. I'm going to pitch a game tonight. Is that okay?
I guess.
Too bad.
Hope it doesn't suck.
It's going to happen anyway. It's going to happen really pretty much any minute now. There's a piece of dust floating in the air that's distracting both of us.
It is.
All right. Anyway. This is a game I've been working on in little bits and fits and starts here for, I guess for a couple months. A while back, I prototyped it a while back, and actually I had tweeted a picture or two of it, but it wasn't really ready for me to talk about in detail because I was just kind of trying some ideas, trying some things out. And I don't really have a name for it yet, so right now I'm just calling it the tower building game. Okay?
Clever.
It is. And we talked about names last time and how hard that is. It's very hard.
It's really difficult.
Yeah. The tower building game. The idea of this game is that you are a real estate developer of some kind, right? And you are trying to build a skyscraper, all right? To build that skyscraper, you need to build floors, right? And you need to put in utilities into that structure. You know, you need to put in you have to build it with structure, with concrete, you know, concrete and steel, and you need to wire it up for electricity, and you need to plumb it for water, and you need to put in heating and cooling so that your people can survive, you know, all that stuff. But also, being a real estate developer is expensive. It's going to cost you a lot of money. A major part of the game is getting into debt.
Sounds like America.
Yeah. So you have to borrow money from the bank in order to spend money to build your tower. And you're not going to really be able to make any money off that tower until it's all done, until people can start moving into it. Okay. Right now I have set it up as a 2-player game. It probably could be stretched to 4 players, but I kind of like the idea of keeping it a 2-player game. I don't know. I mean, that's up for discussion, up for, you know, playtesting and to be determined. I think it could work really well as a 2-player game, though.
Okay. Right?
So what you have here is you have a deck of cards, and it's the same deck that everybody draws from, right? Okay. And in that deck, you have a few different card types. I have some prototype cards here. There it is. Okay, we have a few different card types. We have floor cards. A floor card is just that, a floor of your tower, right? Okay. Every card that we have here is some kind of cost. So it's gonna and the costs vary depending on the type of card that it is and what kind of benefits it might give you, what kind of money it's gonna earn you in the end. But you have a floor tile or a floor card, and you stack those up in order to build your tower. You have roof cards. You need to top your tower off with a roof. And only if you have a roof on your tower are you going to be able to get points for that. Okay. Then we have bonus cards. Bonus cards give you multipliers to your score in the end, but they also cost more money to build, more to install.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have attack and defense cards. Attacks will cause your opponent to lose a floor. It's some kind of sabotage or some kind of accident or something that happened on the construction site. So if you can play an attack card on your opponent, it's going to make them have to remove their top floor from their building. Unless they have a defense card. The other option, if they don't want to lose that floor, they could instead spend money to mitigate those losses. Okay?
Okay.
Borrow more money from the bank, right? And then finally, we have defense cards. The other option is if they don't want to spend money, they can play a defense card if they have one in their hand that would, you know, either say, nope, that's canceled, that actually didn't happen, it was a mistake or it was an error, or they might be able to bounce it back to you, right? And I like that idea of being able to bounce it back to the previous person, because that whole take that idea is I want that to be a core part of the game.
And it makes you wonder about risking playing that attack card, knowing that they might be able to serve you back.
Right, exactly. Now, all those cards cost money with the exception of a defense card. Defense cards generally are free to play, unless it's some kind of really, really nasty defense that is going to do something bad to the guy who tried to attack you. Then it might cost a little bit, okay. But we'll see. So the idea is that at the start of the game, everybody starts with $0 in the bank. Okay. And we're going to have like a score tracker around the board. Right. And you have a little token that you put place on there starting at zero saying, this is how much money I have at any given time. We've all seen those kinds of things, right?
Yes.
But you start the game with zero money. Let's say I want to build a floor and the floor I have here is going to cost me eight. Well, I don't know if that's 80, if that's 800, if that's 8,000. I don't know.
We'll just
call it eight units.
I like it.
Okay, eight units. And then, so if I'm going to build that floor, I have to move my score tracker on that tracker board down to -8. Okay, and we identify negative or positive by flipping that tracking token over, you know?
That's a great idea. That's a really simple way to track that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So then next we want to put another floor and that's going to cost me another six, and then another floor that's going to cost me another five. And then I've got this bonus card here is going to give me a times two to my total score. That's going to cost me 14, because holy cow, that's expensive to get that multiplier, but maybe it's worth it. And then in the end, I'm going to spend six to put a roof on this structure. Okay. And that roof is going to cost me six, but it's going to give me a value of three. All right. So then I take, when I'm all done here, I take the total number of floors, which I think we said we had four floors.
Okay,
we have four floors times two, because we have that bonus multiplier, times two. So we have eight floors times a point value of three, which is, what did that say? That's 32? No, that's, I can do math. That's 22.
Okay.
22?
I don't know. You lost me at
24.
Math. 28 times 24. Three?
Be 24 points.
8 times 3 is 24.
Yeah, thank
you. Of
this,
I am confident.
I'm doing good. So you get 24 points, right? So that's the idea. So you would go into a certain amount of debt to get that, but hopefully when you build that tower big enough and you score it out by putting a roof on it, you're going to make more money back than you spent.
Right.
Obviously, it would have cost you a lot more than 24 to actually install those floors. I need to figure out the numbers and the balancing on that and the scoring structure.
Right.
But so, that's the idea.
So, quick question. Do you disassemble the tower when you score your points?
Yeah, that's the idea. Starting your next turn, you tear down that tower, you start building the next one.
Okay. The only reason I was asking is because how else would you know what it was worth?
Yeah.
Now, right. I thought from the things you talked about before, mm-hmm. maybe this has changed, but you have little things that you use.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
This is what's going to make a difference. So, first of all, before I start with that, so this idea here is you're only getting points when you finished a tower, right? And so the taller your tower, the more points you're going to get for it.
Right.
But if you make a bunch of small towers, you're going to get to score them out more frequently. So you need to decide which way to approach that or try and balance those benefits.
And
right?
I assume risk reward. If the game ended and you had a big unfinished tower,
you don't get anything for it.
You're going to get hosed.
Yeah, because that means, you know, whatever market collapses or supplies run out or whatever. Right.
Right.
Right. So, okay. There's a worker placement aspect in this game too, because in order to build these towers, you need to get resources. You need to get the structure, the concrete and steel that I mentioned. You need to get plumbing in there. You need to get heating and cooling in there. You need to get electricity in those buildings. Okay. And so you need to get each of those resources from different vendors. Okay. So we have a board out there, and the board is set up. Let's see. Right now I have it with,
Rob has left the mic.
Just turned around. They can hear me.
He left the room.
I have six spaces on this board, okay?
Okay.
Okay, because for this worker placement aspect, everybody starts the game with two workers.
Two workers.
Okay.
I like it.
We have six spaces. We have red, blue, yellow, and gray, okay? Red is heating and cooling. Blue is water. Yellow is electricity. And gray is structure.
The
concrete and steel, right? Then we have two more spaces that are the bank and the architect, okay? At the start of your turn, you have two workers you can place, all right? You take turns, and you can put up to two workers in one spot. So you can never have more than two workers in any one spot. So you could place both of your guys in one and prevent the other guy from putting anybody in there. Right.
That'd be tricksy.
Or you can spread them out. Right. Okay.
Right.
So for every guy you put at one of the vendors, red, blue, yellow, and gray, you're going to get one resource from that. And these are like little cylindrical wooden items.
They're like wooden cubes, except for they're wooden cylinders.
Yeah, I want them to be cylinders is what I'm thinking, right? If you put a guy in the architect, for every guy you have at the architect's office, you can draw another card from the deck to go into your hand.
Cool.
Okay. And right now I'm thinking a hand limit of 5 to 7 cards. I'm not really sure exactly.
How many would you start with?
I'm thinking you're starting with 3. But again, balancing needs to be done, right?
Right.
Okay. And then in order to actually build anything on your tower, you need to put a guy in the bank. The bank is where you're actually going to borrow the money to build that thing. And for every guy you put at the bank, that's one card that you can build on your tower, right?
Cool.
Okay. So, resources. Each card that you're going to put on your building has colored tokens or colored symbols or icons in each corner, okay? And each color corresponds with a resource. So, you start out with a base, and this would be, so there's two boards for this game, right? There's your resource board, and then there's your construction site, okay? The construction site has just a generic foundation already printed on there with four colored resource spots, okay? In order to build your first floor, let's say your construction, your foundation piece that's already printed on the board, you need one blue, one red, one yellow, one black, or excuse me, gray.
Cool.
All right. And so you need to get one of each of those resources.
Like in the four corners.
In the four corners. Exactly. In the four corners. Right. So you put one of those things down in each of the spots, and then you put a guy in the bank, and then you can build your first floor. Okay.
Makes sense.
Right. Now, putting those resources on those four corners it's just simple. There's no extra cost for doing that. That's part of the cost of building that floor. Right. And you don't have to spend any money to actually get those resources from the vendors. What you're doing, the idea here is that you're when you're putting your guys at those different vendors' offices, you're you know, getting contracts with them, signing up for it, and then when you go to the bank to borrow money, that's when all the construction is actually done and everybody comes in and installs that stuff, which is why it's going to cost money from the bank. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So you put in a new floor, and now you have a new floor on top of the old one, on top of your foundation. That's raised up off the board by those tokens, by those cubes, those resource cylinders.
Right.
And you have a new floor with four new colored spots on it. In order to build the next floor on top of that, you got to get those four resources. Okay. The one time when that's different is when you're playing a bonus card. A bonus card is going to have all four corners are just going to be white circles. Okay. You can install a bonus card as a floor, but you cannot build on top of it. You then have to spend more money to put a floor on top of that bonus card. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yep.
Right. So that a bonus card cannot be used as a floor. It can only be used in combination with a floor.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
And so that's basically the idea. And you're going to get different benefits. Like some floors maybe won't give you any benefit at all. No bonus. But maybe you'll have a floor that'll give you a +1 blue resource. So on your next turn, as long as that floor is exposed and is your top floor, you're going to get that one bonus for it. So that means every time you go to put a guy in the water, in the plumbing supply office,
mm-hmm.
Okay, for every one resource you're going to get, you're actually going to get two resources.
So you could actually milk that, correct? Like you could be like,
that's the idea.
I'm going to stay here for a few turns, get a bunch of water.
Right.
That way my plumbing stuff is all set.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can focus on the next one.
Right.
That's really smart.
Yeah. And so the idea is that if you have a whole lot of cards in your hand that you're like, oh man, I got like four good floors here that I want to install, but the one that's already out there gives me a really good benefit. Like another one of the benefits or bonuses you might get is an extra worker. So you would have three guys out there instead of just two to place the different resource places.
So then as soon as you put the next floor up, That worker goes away.
That worker goes away, and you're going to get the next benefit. So you might hold on to four floors in your hand while you're gathering resources so that you can go bam, 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 and install three floors all in one turn.
Right.
And just, like, shoot that thing up.
What do you think the percentage-wise, just guess, would be have a bonus on a floor?
I want to say that of the floor cards, okay, I'm thinking that 75% of them would have some kind of a bonus. All right. That worker bonus might be 10% or something. You know, that's a really good, not real common one. But in terms of actual numbers of cards, my prototype deck was 100 cards. Mm-hmm. That's way too many cards. Took way too long to play. Right. We got I'd bored. Imagine, yeah. We got bored with it. So I'm going to have to cut that deck down. I don't know if I'm going to do 50 cards or 70 cards or what.
I mean, just by what you described, 50 sounds like probably still more than enough.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Only because you're just going to be holding so many floors. Because, like, I guess my strategy for this game would be to do what you said, where it's like, all right, I got a floor that's going to give me a bunch of plumbing, get the plumbing. Now I got an extra worker, get a bunch of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would the workers be placed each turn?
Yeah, you would, just like we do in Stone Age, you take turns. Whoever goes first places their first worker, or two or three.
And you just go back and forth on that.
Right, yeah. You can only place in one space or one location at a time. So if you want to put all three guys, if you have three workers, well, let's just say you have your two workers. If you want to put both of your guys in one spot, you put them down, you're done. But if you only want to put one guy in one spot, you put that one guy down, then it goes to the next player.
So if you want to block someone, so you mm-hmm. always have the chance to block someone.
You always have the chance to block somebody.
But that next turn, they have the chance to block you.
Right.
Because it's right. always going to go back and forth.
Right. And just because you put a guy there doesn't mean you have to do it. You know?
Of
you
course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just right. like Stone Age.
Right.
Right. I mean, the idea is like you're blocking people from getting to what they want.
Exactly.
What's nice is because it's a two-player game, again, you're going to get hosed mm-hmm. next time if they... They're like, oh, Rob needs to go to the architect office. I don't think so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's the idea. And when we were trying it with Christine and I, we were playtesting it, it's kind of fun to see that tower grow. Then you literally have a tower standing up on your desktop.
Oh, I think that's one of the coolest things. It's very tactile, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I like about
there's
it.
There's a lot of ways you could do this that wouldn't be like that,
mm-hmm.
and the game doesn't sound that great. Like,
yeah.
But when you combine what I think sound like pretty cool rules... with a tower that goes up,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I was really worried about stability, about those things being wobbly or something. And we were just using just flimsy index cards, you know,
uh-huh.
that are really thin and lightweight. And the resource pieces that we were using aren't real tall; they're real small pieces. And I mean, it was a little janky. But I think if we had shorter resource pieces, because it's not like you have to have like a, you know, 2 foot tall tower here. You right. just the idea of getting it raised up off the table is kind of fun. So if you put some, you know, a little bit lower profile pieces, and then you get a real sturdy, heavy standard, heavyweight playing card on that, I think it'd be super stable, super strong. And I wouldn't worry about it toppling over or you know, you're not going to go blowing on the thing. But,
right.
you know, that's I think it could be fun.
You should have written in the rules. This is funny. You should have written in the rules that if you knock another player's tower over, they get 10 free units or something like that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you would...
Just
you
because
would,
why not? It'd right. be funny, right? I mean, it yeah. reminds me of Dread with the Jenga tower.
Where yeah.
if you knock it over accidentally, even mm-hmm. when you're not playing,
yeah.
you're dead.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's just how it works.
And you're right. And you would have to do that thing, kind of thing in there. When we were playing, we had our ceiling fan on. So it's not like, the ceiling fan wasn't blowing
right,
it over or anything,
right.
you know. It's not too fragile. It wasn't as fragile as I was afraid of.
Right. And that was, like you said, with janky index cards and stuff. You get real thick cards.
Yeah.
And the pieces that are meant for it.
Yeah.
Idea for a card that I think might be fun. Just, uh-huh. just a thought.
Sure.
Have like a tax card
mm-hmm.
or like a zoning card or something to where like you can penalize, say... one unit for every floor they have on a non-finished structure. That might make people afraid to build the super tall structures.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've got like 12 floors, right? And then you're like, and penalty.
Minus $1, one
unit.
Score
yeah.
unit. Yeah, right. For every, yeah. Okay, yeah. That, so, yeah, sure. I mean, that's kind of stuff. I would need a variety of different kinds of attacks.
Right,
I mean,
you need to take that.
Yeah. And now, one other thing that I was thinking about, I was mulling over my head, because, you know, I really like player choice, you know?
Yes.
I really want to give people the opportunity to make choices and make their own strategic decisions. So I was thinking, what if every floor card was both a floor and an attack, or a floor and a defense? So if you could be playing a card as an attack, but if you're playing as an attack, you're not going to be able to use it as a floor.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Or play as a defense, well, you're not going to be able to use it as a floor. I don't know. It's just something that came to mind a few days ago, and I was trying to think that over.
Cool is that's dual purpose, right?
Yeah,
You've got two cards for the price of one. What's not as cool about that is, I think that means you have to have a smaller deck even more so.
Yeah.
Because, well, because think about it. If you've got a floor that's also duels is the other thing, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have so many cards. But if you have, say, a 50-card deck and 30 of those are tower pieces and 20 of those are attack defense cards.
Yeah.
Statistically, you could have more cards because the take that cards are easier to spend than the tower cards.
Yeah, you're right.
So there's a thought. I mean, there's a, there's an argument against, but I'm not saying it's a bad idea because player choice is always good.
Yeah.
Giving your player choices, as long as it's not going to make you know, analysis paralysis, right?
Yeah.
Which I think in a game like that, that if you get analysis paralysis in that game, you shouldn't be playing games.
Yeah. Yeah, so then the game end scenario, okay? Right now I'm thinking the game ends when the deck runs out, okay? But the other option for that is the game ends when the first person reaches $1 million.
Right.
Or, you know, when you hit a certain score like threshold.
50 units or something like that, or 100 units.
100 units, something like that, yeah. So that's those are the two things that would need to be investigated and balanced into. So yeah, obviously you could also play it four player, and maybe that would be better because that would further limit your options on the actual resource board and make it a little tougher, a little more competitive. So maybe it would be good as a four player game too. I've only been thinking about it so far as a two player game, but you know, maybe four is a good idea. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just not sure about, again, deck size.
Right, and the other thing that would be rough with four players is you probably have to scale up the places for the worker placement to be three on a spot.
You think so?
Well, I just think you've got four players now.
Mm-hmm.
You can only have two in a spot. You have eight spots, right?
Yeah.
Which means every spot has six spots. To get six. Two, four, six. Yeah, but two can go in each. So you have 12 spots.
Yeah, okay.
So you have eight units that can be spent, eight workers that can be placed, and 12 places to place them. So I guess there still is four extra. It just really sucks to be the last player because you're going to consistently not get what you need. So if you're doing really well, it allows everyone to constantly screw you. And to me, that goes from take that to not fun really quick.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Another idea for like, you know, you were talking about floor bonuses. It might be cool to have one where if on your turn you get a red and a blue, you get a free gray. So like it kind of determines where you have to play. So the other person always has the chance to block you because you can't put in two spots at once. But what would be cool about that is that would force them to say, okay, I'm going to block red even though I don't need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alternatively, you could have a bonus floor that allows, not a bonus floor, but a floor with a bonus that allows you to place both your people in different spots on your first turn, rather than, then you would basically be unblockable.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, this is the type of stuff that I think of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, these are good thoughts. These are good thoughts. Obviously some of the cards would have wild spots, you know, so you wouldn't, you could have a resource of any color in that section of the card, you know, to build the next thing up.
Right.
To give you some more options there. And those wild, the wild floors are a lot more exciting, right?
They're wild.
Hey, they're wild. Yeah. So that's the idea.
Have you given any thought to the idea that you might score points based on the components that you used? For instance, instead of a roof just saying a multiplier of three, it might say and one unit per red that you have in your tower.
Oh, that's a good thought.
So basically you would be like, I've got a lot of cards that I've read, or I have a wild card and I could put four of whatever I wanted in there.
Yeah.
I think I shall put in four reds.
Okay, that's a good idea.
And then play this roof card.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that idea a lot because, that would help the scoring also.
Yeah, I mean, automatically beefs up your scoring. If you just said, and 1 point for every blue cube used on this.
Yeah, you know, and I thought of that initially. You get points for every resource, but I didn't want to have everybody, you know, I like the idea of just tearing it down and then counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, 2 times, 3 times, 4, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I liked about just counting cards. And I didn't want everybody to have to count out every 1, 2, 3, all four colors, you know?
Right.
But if you're just doing it of one resource color, that might be a really good option.
That would be easy to think about when you're building it, right?
Yeah.
I got a good roof card. I'm going to focus on red.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I'd be curious about would be components. How many would you have, and would it be possible to hoard?
Mm-hmm. You'd have to have some kind of a limit on the number that you can have held in reserve, right? You'd have to say you can have more than, you know, 12 resources in your reserve.
Total.
You know, at any given time before you have to build them. Or maybe you'd say 26. I don't know.
Right.
I wouldn't want somebody to be able to just get everything off the board and keep it and screw everybody else from being able to do anything. So you got to have some kind of limit on that.
Right.
And then how many of each of those resource pieces do you need? I think we were working, because I just pulled the components out of that Pompeii game that we have. And there were something like, I think there were like 25 or 30 of each of those in that game. And that was more than enough because we weren't building a tower all the way to the top. You know, we were building one
right.
8 or 10 cards high and then tearing it down and putting all those resources back.
But that could be a strategy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've got some wild cards. I'm going to focus on getting all the plumbing.
Yeah.
So that no one else has plumbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there's going to have to be some kind of a limit to the number right. of resources you have in reserve at any time. And then, yeah, because you don't want to have to put 100 of each resource type, resource color in your game. That's silly.
Right. That yeah. would be, well, what I was thinking about was a game like Stone Age or even a Settlers or something where you're collecting resources. The difference is you're immediately spending them again.
Yeah.
With this, you're holding on to them because right. you're building a tower.
Right, right.
So
you're going to need more than you
And the
have
game
in
kind
games.
Of encourages hoarding a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because you're like, if I could get a lot of water right now, I'm going to get on it, you know, and then...
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's the idea. Like I said, I already have a basic prototype that had a lot of problems that I learned a lot from. And in fact, this pitch that I have here today has a lot of modifications based on what we learned from that prototype. And now that I have a new computer here in the studio and
that
can get
you
some,
do.
Yeah, get some good software back on it, I think I'm going to do another mock-up. Because that's how we do with damsels. My first mock-up was just all handwritten cards. Then the next step was a little more polished,
fancified,
a little fancified. Yeah, it was still real basic, of course, but
right.
just looked a little better, a little cleaner. So I want to definitely do that with this, and take that next step and see what we can do.
Yeah, and I look forward to trying this game. I've been excited about this game since you talked about it like 2 months ago or something.
It's been a while. Yeah,
it's been driving me crazy because I really want to play it, and now that you've pitched it, I want to play it even more because you didn't give me a lot of info about it. You just talked about the fact, you know, you sent me some pictures and said, this is what I'm trying, this is the concept, and now that I hear more about it, I'm pretty excited.
So. Yeah, I like it a lot. I just don't want to, I was thinking about ways of combining, because, you know, Great Heartland Hauling, you know, he's got those cubes on the cards and cubes, right?
Yeah.
And I really like that combination, that simple combination of those pieces, and I thought, I wonder, is there any other way that I can lay these things out on these cards and build something with them. And right. that, well, why not actually build something with them?
Right. And I think the building is the key, man. That makes it different than stuff I've seen before.
Yeah, I think so.
And I like that. It's like worker placement with hand management with building stuff. You know, physically building stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it.
I think it's fun. Anyway, we are running pretty long here.
Whoa.
Yeah. So why don't we just wrap this up here with a couple quick Twitter questions? Okay.
Yeah. Let's do that.
All right. Let's see. I will read one here real quick from Flip the Table, our good friends Flip the Table at Table Flips You. I think this is specifically from Chris at Flip the Table, and he said, "Where do you look for inspiration for game ideas?" You want to go first?
Sure. Everywhere. You know, I mean, I'm one of those people that just, I'll give you just a couple really quick examples how I thought of games. The conservative developer game I pitched a couple shows ago.
Yeah.
That idea came completely from the fact that I was driving a long ways through Colorado.
Yeah.
And it just sounded like, oh, you know, I mean, I just noticed kind of that difference. And I've noticed that in a lot of nature places we go, the difference between nature stuff and big business and the fact that they're merging. Yeah, so I thought about that.
Sure.
Another good example, Gunslinging Ramblers, right? I got that idea from a song I heard about cowboys.
Yeah.
And I thought, that sounds cool. And then there came a game, you know, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a game where, I mean, I heard a song, had an idea, and I had a game in like 2 days.
Yeah.
So, you know, you never know where those inspiration can come from. How about you?
Yeah, well, like I just said with the tower game that I was thinking about, like lately a lot of my ideas have come from thinking about mechanics and thinking about different ways to approach those mechanics. So with the tower game, You know, how, what are other ways can I combine cards and cubes to make something interesting, make something different?
In your case, cards and cylinders.
Cards and cylinders. Yeah.
Doesn't really have that.
the alliteration is not as good.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. What else? In a couple weeks here, I think I'll pitch a deck building game that I've been thinking about. Thinking about mechanics that I've already seen before, and thinking, you know, what are some other ways to come at that? How else can I approach that? That might be a little different, might be a little more unique. And I've been thinking that way more lately. When we first started, I was thinking theme first, you know, that's where Damsels came from. That's where the monster pageant idea came from. That kind of thing. That's theme first. What's a cool subject? What would make really neat artwork and fun cartoony stuff? And how could I build a game around that? Yeah. So.
Right.
So yeah. So I think my approach to those ideas has changed since we've been doing the show.
And then do you want me to read the second Twitter question?
Do it.
Second Twitter question is from our friend Flip Flory. Also actually from Flip the Table.
Yeah.
We love those guys. We talk to them a lot. He wanted to know if we'd ever be willing to use a spinner in a game. Because like he said, that, you know, it is basically a spinner is just as random as dice and just as functional as dice.
Yeah.
So you go first.
I would love to use a spinner in a game. Are you kidding me? I would love to do that. I mean, it would have to fit the theme, the structure of the game. But, oh, yeah, of course.
I think my biggest concern about using a spinner in a game is that people might think it was cheesy.
Yeah.
But I think that if you did like a steampunk game, right?
And yeah.
The spinner was like the steam boiler
thing. Yeah.
Like, why not do that? I mean, that's awesome.
Now, a spinner isn't exactly the same as a die, because a die technically could you roll it and who knows what's going to happen. A spinner, you could theoretically try and put some English on that and have some general idea of where it might end, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So you'd have to think about that. And actually in design the game with that in mind, you know, but yeah. If it would fit the theme, I'd love to make a game with a spinner. Absolutely.
Awesome. I'm going to read a really quick email we got.
Yeah.
Super fast.
Sure.
From Nate Doherty. He wanted to tell us a couple shows ago, we talked about the mechanic of having a deck of cards and yanking some cards out of games.
Yeah.
And we got two emails about that. The first was from Nate, and he said, he couldn't believe, as Michiganders, we didn't think of Euchre as a game where you do that.
Yeah.
Some of you non-Michigan people may not be familiar with that. That's duh. That's an awesome example where it's built right into the game.
Yep.
The strategy is based on not knowing.
Mm.
And that's cool.
Yeah, I will say that even though I've lived in Michigan now for a little over 15 years, I'm not a native Michigander, and I hate Euchre. I hate Euchre. And anyway, I hate it.
You hate Euchre.
I do.
So we did also get some feedback regarding the regarding that, about taking cards out and how that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have like a magic game or something like that. With as many cards that are on the deck, taking out four cards, not as big of a deal as we said it was.
Okay.
So, yeah. Which, you know, because we don't know much about that.
So I don't play Magic.
We
so
stand
I,
you know. Corrected.
Corrected indeed.
I believe that was Mike who sent that in.
Mike, okay.
So
thank you, guys.
So any other questions we had, we're going to put them on the next episode that we're going to record.
Yep.
We just want to save for time. Quick reminder, the contest is still going.
Yeah, don't forget.
Send us your pitch for why you should come on our show and pitch your game. The email you want to send it to is btgcontest@gmail.com.
You got it.
Anything else from you, Rob?
No, I'm all set. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening to Building the Game. We super appreciate it. You can check us out on Twitter @podcastBTG. I am @poorly_designed. Jason is @JASlingerland. You can email us to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can, what else?
Like us on Facebook.
You can like us on Facebook.
That challenge is still out there.
Still out there. You get 100 likes and Jason will do something extra special for us.
And we're getting there.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good. You can give us 5 stars on iTunes and a lovely review. We would really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Have I forgotten anything?
I think you covered it all, sir.
Okay, all right. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Party rocking in the house tonight. Everybody's gonna have a good time. That's all I know. That and shuffling.
Every day I'm shuffling.
Dancing hamsters.
That's probably enough.
Oh, that's more than enough.